White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
Yo, 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 here we are, Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here today. This is the 22nd. Wow, this month has really speeded by. If you didn't get the word yesterday, the PayPal account has been closed. We've been attacked. Anyhow, you can't send funds to PayPal anymore. Send cash, check, or money order. Cash, check, money order, or what else? To Tom Metzger or to War. Whichever. P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Or you can send it to the bunker at 1134 South Ferguson Road, Warsaw, Indiana, 46580. Yeah, that'll do her. I'll probably start up with another company on this, like PayPal, one that's a little more liberal, so... But if not, use the P.O. box or the street address to send your donations in. And if you don't have your March donations in yet, you better get them in here. Okay. Well, did any of you guys get over to the AIPAC meeting yesterday, the big Jew outfit, where all the politicians go over there and suck up? They played quite a bit of that stuff on TV last night. And this guy from Ohio did everything but get down on his knees and do oral. Kasich. It's unbelievable how they fawn over Israel. There's no reason to fawn over Israel at all. You could treat them like any other country. If they're friends, fine. If they're not, screw them, you know. Well, anyhow, I got a surprise for you. I've got Mr. Trump's speech here. I think I'll read it to you. No, in fact, I'm going to play his speech for you right from the word of the mouth at the AIPAC meeting. Here we go.
Thank you very much. I speak to you today as a lifelong supporter and true friend of Israel. I'm a newcomer to politics, but not to backing the Jewish state. In 2001, weeks after the attacks on New York City and on Washington, and frankly, the attacks on all of us, attacks that perpetrated, and they were perpetrated by the Islamic fundamentalists, Mayor Rudy Giuliani visited Israel to show solidarity with terror victims. I sent my plane because I backed the mission for Israel 100%. In spring of 2004, at the height of the violence in the Gaza Strip, I was the Grand Marshal of the 40th Salute to Israel Parade, the largest single gathering in support of the Jewish state. For anyone supporting Israel, many people turned down this honor. I did not. I took the risk, and I'm glad I did. My number one priority is to dismantle the disastrous deal with Iran. Thank you. Thank you. I have been in business a long time. I know deal making. And let me tell you, this deal is catastrophic for America, for Israel, and for the whole of the Middle East. The problem here is fundamental. We've rewarded the world's leading state sponsor of terror with $150 billion, and we received absolutely nothing in return. I've studied this issue in great detail, I would say actually greater by far than anybody else. Believe me. Oh, believe me. And it's a bad deal. The biggest concern with the deal is not necessarily that Iran is going to violate it, because already, you know, as you know, it has. The bigger problem is that they can keep the terms and still get the bomb by simply running out the clock. And of course, they'll keep the billions and billions of dollars that we so stupidly and foolishly gave them. The deal doesn't even require Iran to dismantle its military nuclear capability. Yes, it places limits on its military nuclear program for only a certain number of years. But when those restrictions expire, Iran will have an industrial-sized military nuclear capability ready to go, and with zero provision for delay, no matter how bad Iran's behavior is. Terrible, terrible situation that we are all placed in, and especially Israel. When I'm president, I will adopt a strategy that focuses on three things when it comes to Iran. First, we will stand up to Iran's aggressive push to destabilize and dominate the region. Iran is a very big problem and will continue to be, but if I'm not elected president, I know how to deal with trouble, and believe me, that's why I'm going to be elected president, folks. And we are leading in every poll. Remember that, please. Iran is a problem in Iraq, a problem in Syria, a problem in Lebanon, a problem in Yemen, and will be a very, very major problem for Saudi Arabia. Literally every day, Iran provides more and better weapons to support their puppet states. Hezbollah, Lebanon received, and I'll tell you what, it has received sophisticated anti-ship weapons, anti-aircraft weapons, and GPS systems and rockets like very few people anywhere in the world, and certainly very few countries have. Now they're in Syria trying to establish another front against Israel from the Syrian side of the Golan Heights. In Gaza, Iran is supporting Hamas and Islamic Jihad. And in the West Bank, they're openly offering Palestinians $7,000 per terror attack and $30,000 for every Palestinian terrorist home that's been destroyed. A deplorable, deplorable situation. Iran is financing military forces throughout the Middle East, and it's absolutely incredible that we handed them over $150 billion to do even more toward the many horrible acts of terror. Secondly, we will totally dismantle Iran's global terror network, which is big and powerful, but not powerful like us. Iran has seeded terror groups all over the world, During the last 5 years, Iran has perpetuated terror attacks in 25 different countries on 5 continents. They've got terror cells everywhere, including in the Western Hemisphere, very close to home. Iran is the biggest sponsor of terrorism around the world, and we will work to dismantle that reach. Believe me, believe me. Third, at the very least, we must enforce the terms of the previous deal to hold Iran totally accountable, and we will enforce it like you've never seen a contract enforced before, folks. Believe me. Iran has already, since the deal is in place, test-fired ballistic missiles 3 times. Those ballistic missiles, with a range of 1,250 miles, were designed to intimidate not only Israel, which is only 600 miles away, but also intended to frighten Europe and someday maybe hit even the United States. And we're not going to let that happen. We're not letting it happen. And we're not letting it happen to Israel, believe me. Thank you. Thank you. Do you want to hear something really shocking? As many of the great people in this room know, painted on those missiles, in both Hebrew and Farsi, were the words, Israel must be wiped off the face of the earth. You can forget that. What kind of demented minds write that in Hebrew? And here's another. You talk about twisted. Here's another twisted part. Testing these missiles does not even violate the horrible deal that we've made. The deal is silent on test missiles. But those tests do violate the United Nations Security Council resolutions. The problem is no one has done anything about it. We will, I promise, we will. Thank you. Which brings me to my next point, the utter weakness and incompetence of the United Nations. The United Nations is not a friend of democracy. It's not a friend to freedom. It's not a friend even to the United States of America, where, as you know, it has its home. And it surely is not a friend to Israel. With President Obama in his final year, yay! He may be the worst thing to ever happen to Israel, believe me. Believe me. And you know it, and you know it better than anybody. So with the president in his final year, discussions have been swirling about an attempt to bring a Security Council resolution on terms of an eventual agreement between Israel and Palestine. Let me be clear. An agreement imposed by the United Nations would be a total and complete disaster. The United States must oppose this resolution and use the power of our veto, which I will use as president 100%. When people ask why, it's because that's not how you make a deal. Deals are made when parties come together. They come to a table and they negotiate. Each side must give up something. It's values. I mean, we have to do something where there's value in exchange for something that it requires. That's what a deal is. A deal is really something that when we impose it on Israel and Palestine, we bring together a group of people that come up with something that's not going to happen with the United Nations. It will only further, very importantly, it will only further delegitimize Israel. It will be a catastrophe and a disaster for Israel. It's not going to happen, folks. And further, it would reward Palestinian terrorism, because every day they're stabbing Israelis and even Americans. Just last week, American Taylor Allen Force, a West Point grad, phenomenal young person who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, was murdered in the street by a knife-wielding Palestinian. You don't reward behavior like that. You cannot do it. There's only one way you treat that kind of behavior. You have to confront it. So it's not up to the United Nations to really go with a solution. It's really the parties that must negotiate a resolution themselves. They have no choice. They have to do it themselves, or it will never hold up anyway. The United States can be useful as a facilitator of negotiations, but no one should be telling Israel that it must be, and really that it must abide by some agreement made by others thousands of miles away that don't even really know what's happening to Israel, to anything in the area. It's so preposterous. We're not going to let that happen. When I'm president, believe me, I will veto any attempt by the UN to impose its will on the Jewish state. It will be vetoed 100%. You see, I know about deal making. That's what I do. I wrote The Art of the Deal. One of the best-selling all-time, and I mean seriously, I'm saying one of, because I'll be criticized as I say the, so I'm going to be very diplomatic. One of, I'll be criticized. I think it is number one, but why take a chance? One of the all-time best-selling books about deals and deal-making. To make a great deal, you need two willing participants. We know Israel is willing to deal. Israel has been trying. That's right. Israel has been trying to sit down at the negotiating table without preconditions for years. You had Camp David in 2000, where Prime Minister Barak made an incredible offer, maybe even too generous. Arafat rejected it. In 2008, Prime Minister Olmert made an equally generous offer. The Palestinian Authority rejected it also. Then John Kerry tried to come up with a framework, and Abbas didn't even respond, not even to the Secretary of State of the United States of America. They didn't even respond. When I become president, the days of treating Israel like a second-class citizen will end on day one. Thank you. And when I say something, I mean it. I mean it. I will meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu immediately. I have known him for many years and will be able to work closely together to help bring stability and peace to Israel and to the entire region. Meanwhile, every single day, you have rampant incitement and children being taught to hate Israel and to hate the Jews. It has to stop. When you live in a society where the firefighters are the heroes, little kids want to be firefighters. When you live in a society where athletes and movie stars are the heroes, little kids want to be athletes and movie stars. In Palestinian society, the heroes are those who murder Jews. We can't let this continue. We can't let this happen any longer. You cannot achieve peace if terrorists are treated as martyrs. Glorifying terrorists is a tremendous barrier to peace. It is a horrible, horrible way to think. It's a barrier that can't be broken. That will end, and it'll end soon, believe me. In Palestinian textbooks and mosques, you've got a culture of hatred that has been fermenting there for years, and if we want to achieve peace, they've got to go out and they've got to start this educational process. They have to end education of hatred. They have to end it, and now. There is no moral equivalency. Israel does not name public squares after terrorists. Israel does not pay its children to stab random Palestinians. You see, what President Obama gets wrong about deal making is that he constantly applies pressure to our friends and rewards our enemies. And you see that happening all the time. That pattern practiced by the president and his administration, including former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who is a total disaster, by the way. She and President Obama have treated Israel very, very badly. But it's repeated itself over and over again and has done nothing to embolden those who hate America. We saw that with releasing the $150 billion to Iran in the hope that they would magically join the world community. It didn't happen. President Obama thinks that applying pressure to Israel will force the issue, but it's precisely the opposite that happens. Already, half of the population of Palestine has been taken over by the Palestinian ISIS and Hamas, and the other half refuses to confront the first half, so it's a very difficult situation that's never going to get solved unless you have great leadership right here in the United States. We'll get it solved one way or the other. We will get it solved. But when the United States stands with Israel, the chances of peace really rise and rises exponentially. That's what will happen when Donald Trump is president of the United States. We will move the American embassy to the eternal capital of the Jewish people, Jerusalem. And we will send a clear signal that there is no daylight between America and our most reliable ally, the State of Israel. The Palestinians must come to the table knowing that the bond between the United States and Israel is absolutely, totally unbreakable. They must come to the table, willing and able, to stop the terror being committed on a daily basis against Israel. They must do that. And they must come to the table willing to accept that Israel is a Jewish state, and it will forever exist as a Jewish state. I love the people in this room. I love Israel. I love Israel. I've been with Israel so long in terms of I've received some of my greatest honors from Israel. My father before me, incredible. My daughter Ivanka is about to have a beautiful Jewish baby. In fact, it could be happening right now, which would be very nice as far as I'm concerned. So I want to thank you very much. This has been a truly great honor. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, there you go. Right from the horse's mouth. You don't have to take it from me. All those right-wingers that run out there and all those right-wing leaders that ran out there to support this guy, I knew there was a problem. I knew there was a problem from the very beginning, even though he did say a lot of things that we like to hear. But this is what we don't like to hear. Look at David Duke running out there supporting Donald Trump. You see, just to get on the bandwagon, just to get the name in the paper, get the name in the on television, get some more donations in there. Yeah. Well, I hope you are embarrassed now, all you right-wingers that ran out to support this warmongering son of a bitch. You know, these people never seem to understand how Iran got to be pissed off like it is. You remember way back in the 40s, wasn't it? Early 50s? When we caused the overthrow of what was it, Marcellus the Dick? I'm trying to remember what his name was, but he was a democratically elected leader in Iran, and we knocked him off, put that Shah of Iran, that dictator with all his secret police into power, and we kept him in power. And so people don't seem to remember all that, and how we gave all the weapons to Saddam Hussein and the poison chemical weapons, too, that he used on Iran. So you need to go back in history. No wonder Iran doesn't trust the United States. Why should they? And why should they not have an atomic bomb when Israel's got, we don't know how many, but she's got a plenty of them. I don't want to see any country getting more atomic bombs, but on the other hand, if Israel's got bombs all over the place, well, how can you expect another country not to want the same thing? Because Israel's got the firepower and the backing of the military-industrial complex in this country where they can attack anybody anytime and wipe them out, just like they flew into Iran, or was it Iraq, and blew up their nuclear power plant, I believe it was. And nothing happened. Nobody did anything, you know. So he got it from the turkey's mouth. He's a warmonger. He's a part of the billionaire ruling class. He's a rabid Zionist, pro-Jew guy. So, there you go. You got it. tell all those guys, those right-wingers out there that are going to run out and vote for Donald Trump, to kiss your ass and get their mind right. To be perfectly honest, the longer it goes, the more respect I have for Obama. Yeah, an octoroon, mulatto. He surely wasn't our guy, but there's some of the things he did and stood up to those people that you got to give him credit. We'd have been back into a ground war over there in Syria and so forth if he hadn't dug his heels in. And if Hillary, the wicked witch, gets in, you're going to see us back into ground wars again. You can bet your life on that. Now these right-wingers are getting all excited about Breitbart. Breitbart's got a powerful radio show on the web. And they've got a lot of people. They're really getting hold of all the right-wingers. And Andrew Breitbart started it. And he died. But it continues on, putting out totally right-wing stuff. They hate racists. And you're a neo-Nazi. And you're a white supremacist. Well, that's okay. But I'm going to play you what Breitbart, the founder of the Breitbart Network, had to say about race. And then you better decide who's your friend and who's your enemy, because you can't serve two masters. I don't expect you to serve as a master, but you certainly can't. You've got to choose. You're either going to be a white racial separatist all the way, or are you going to fuck around in the right wing? And if you do, I don't want any part of you. You can go with the Dukester. Go with the Plastic Man. He has a place for you at the end of his line there, where you line up to give him your money. Well, I can't find that Breitbart thing right at the moment, but I will, and I'll play it for you. But here's a blurb I caught off RT this morning, in regards to all this bombing going on in Europe, in which, guess who really set all this shit off? The U.S. Military-industrial complex that keeps pushing people around, trying to tell them they want them to have a different kind of government. We want you to have a different kind of government. If you don't want it, we'll bomb the shit out of you. And that's what they've been doing for a long time. And the Russians did the same thing in Afghanistan, but the Russians learned their lesson in Afghanistan, I think.
Bad deal. Just like Dr. Frankenstein built up his monster, only for it to quickly break out of control. That's what happened. I told Mrs. Thatcher on the eve of the fall of Kabul in the 1980s, you have opened the gates for the barbarians, and a long dark night will now descend. I never said truer words.
And Mr. Galloway, in terms of the broader EU policy on the migrant crisis, these attacks obviously come on the back of that deal between the EU and Turkey in terms of the funding and the exchange of asylum seekers between the camps. What impact will this have on any future such deals, and indeed on the migrant crisis in Europe at the moment?
Well, it's not having any impact at all. The sea of misery still streams our way. And that's not, I think, in the short term going to change. It was a very sordid deal, you know. Erdogan, who did so much to create this refugee crisis, accepts large amounts of European money to try, we'll see if he succeeds, in staunching the flow. And in exchange, he gets accelerated talks on Turkey's entry into the European Union. So it's a very good deal, but only for Erdogan.
Yes, sir. I heard the caller that called in earlier about the reason Donald Trump is so hated.
Yep.
I really think the establishment can't control him, but I'm also concerned with Ted Cruz's wife being a member of Goldman Sachs, plus a member of the task force on NAFTA. I mean, these are things that should come into play also when you do research.
Let me ask you, what is your concern? I worked at Goldman Sachs for many years. Of course, it was, you know, 30 years ago. What is your concern about Ted Cruz's wife working at Goldman Sachs? Why would that, you know, is she's an accomplished woman. She's, I think she's a managing director there. She's made her own way in the world. She doesn't come from a wealthy family. What would be your concern with her working at Goldman Sachs? Is it some sort of influence for some globalist agenda on Ted Cruz?
I truly believe so. Would you not? I mean, she's going to have influence on his play in the White House if he were to get elected. Plus, being on the North American trade, that's a one world government to me.
Is this the, let me ask you, because I'm going to get back to Liam. One of the reasons that those rallies taking place in London, these big protests, is about this massive vote they have in June on their national sovereignty. Do you believe, Barbara, that this election in November in the United States comes down to really our up or down vote on our national sovereignty, nationalist versus globalist?
I do.
And how do you think that's going to play out? Do you think a lot of conservatives, you think a lot of people on your side of the football understand that, or do you think they're still kind of confused about what the stakes are here?
I believe a lot of people are confused about the stakes. You know, you're looking at a one-world government as opposed to trying to bring back the United States. The United States is damaged now. And there's a lot of people in control of, well, your elite, George Soros, and the United Nations.
Barbara, thank you so much. Fantastic call. Make sure
I'll try to get you that Breitbart commercial for tomorrow. Couldn't find it. I have trouble keeping these audio bits separated when I do them during the night. Anyhow, they do it every day to let you racists know that you're not welcome. But yet, a whole lot of people call in there, I know, have racial feelings, but they won't talk about it because he'll kick them off the air, as usual, just like a liberal, just like a progressive. Well, we got some good news, a letter from Richard Scutari, and I'm going to read it to you. Dear Tom, greetings, kinsman. I hope this finds you all going well for you. I've been trying to call you on the new 442 number you gave me, but do not ever seem to catch you at home. So anyhow, I had to tell him to use my home phone number again because for some reason he's not getting through on the cell number. I still have not heard back on my parole appeal. I'm hoping to hear something by the end of the month. I figure they are slow to answer because they are trying to justify how they granted Yahweh Ben Yahweh parole with his beliefs and denied me because of mine. You remember Yahweh Ben Yahweh, don't you? He's the black minister of the black Israelites down in Florida. It's the black version of Christian identity. Anyway, Yahweh Ben Yahweh was big news in Florida back in the days when he sent out his followers to kill white people and bring back body parts to prove they did. That did the deeds. If I remember right, Yahweh Ben Yahweh was granted parole on his first try back in the late 1990s. And I'm still here. They finally got me sitting in front of the TV. I'm really enjoying watching the political process. No, I'm not a Trump fan, nor do I give a shit about any of the others. But I do find it funny and entertaining what he is doing to the establishment. He has tapped into the frustration of the sheep, and the sheep are bleeding. But that is all it is going to be, bleeding. Things have gone too far, which to my mind is good. Like you say, worse is better. The collapse of the ballyhooing of the country is coming. That's not the right word. Oh, balkanization. balkanizing of the country is coming. My hope is that it will bring a Bastille Day with it. It is probably the only way I'll ever get out of this prison. With that, I'm gone. Ever again, thanks for your support. Give my love to your family. 14 words, Richard. There you go. Hey, and here's a letter from Dennis Mahon about that. Dear Tom, I sure thank you for your generous donation of the $25 to my inmate account 3 or 4 days ago. Nobody in the phony conservative right-wing racist bowel movement best not ever say anything negative to me about you, or they will eat a knuckle sandwich. Now that is sure an old-school expression. Well, it sure is. Enclosed is a memo from the Bureau of Prisons National Office in La Grande Cesspool, as Bob Miles used to say, that you can have fun with. Well, I remember that, La Cesspool Grande. I didn't know the Jewish Mel Brooks was a nationalist admirer of Uncle Adolf. His satire song, Springtime for Hitler, from his production, The Producers, has been banned from our MP3 players. The agencies of the federal government truly are lunatic asylums. Anyway, my attorney, Dan Kaplan, recently mailed me a 90-page writ of certiorari, SIC, petition to the Supreme Court. My brother will mail you a copy within a month or so. Kaplan did a pretty good job, it seems. Thank you for the amazing two booklets entitled Quantum Detector, How to Spot Every Lie, and Quantum Vision Success Journal. Wow, I want to read them several times. I'm learning so much from these booklets. Tom, it seems some psychological warfare is being used on me here. My housing unit is being filled with white convicted sexual offenders, mostly child molesters, child porn distributors. Let's see here. Page 2. Oh, and militant illegal immigrant mestizos. Every time I go to the chow hall, or I'm in the chow line, they start screaming to each other in Spanish, even though most of them can speak English. I have asked ones who I know can speak English about the great space rockets and flights Mexico has made in the past 40 years. Or doesn't Mexico make a jetliner bigger than the Boeing 747? I really pissed one of them off when I praised Mexico for declaring war on Germany at the same time America did in 1941. But when the Mexican government asked for volunteers, not one brave, macho Mexican man volunteered to fight the Germans. Tom, we have 10 non-sex offender whites in my housing unit. 2 are Muslims. 6 are drug users, mostly K2, Suboxone, and Wellbutrin SIC users. I don't know what the hell that is. We have 16 white sex child offenders and 15 or 16 mestizos in our housing unit. Has more child molesters and mestizos than any of the other 11 housing units. It seems the Bureau of Prisons is transferring all the white non-sex offenders out of here and filling this FCI with child molesters. It is real tough for me mentally here. Anyway, has Romeo Sierra in the world yet? Could you B-O-L-O for used copy of the book I'd like to have, The March of the Titans? I sent him a note. I sent him that book about 3 weeks ago. Evidently, he still hasn't got it. I hope the prison didn't grab it. Yet I can't afford the $42 that Barn Review wants for it. That's typical of the Cardo operation. Because I bought that thing for less than $15. So I tell these guys, never order a book through the regular sources. Tell me what you want, and I'll get it cheap. Anyhow, he says, my dad is 95 years old. Please feel free to call Dan, and he gives me his number. That's his brother, your loyal friend and comrade, Dennis Mahon. Forgot to give you all the dope on this banning Mel Brooks' Springtime for Hitler. I've got this inmate notification that Dennis sent me. It says, on March 9, 2016, the following songs will be removed from the Music Services Library for the identified reasons. Mel Brooks, Inappropriate. Song, Springtime for Hitler. Album, High Anxiety. Original soundtrack, Mel Brooks' Greatest Hits Feat. Fabulous film scores of John Morris. Remove that. And then they got one here, let's see. Another one, Springtime for Hitler. And there's several here from different sources. They banned them all in the prison library. Mel Brooks, they think, is a pro-Hitler guy, I guess. That's how stupid these people who run these prisons are. Yeah. Let's see, there's some more stuff here on this paper. Oh, there's one here. Sly and the Family Stone song. Don't call me a nigger, Whitey. Explicit lyrics. They banned that one. The Family Stone. Sly and the... Yeah, well, that's the same thing. Whitey Morgan and the 78s. If It Ain't Broke. Honky Tonks and Cheap Motels. I don't know what the hell, what's wrong with that. After the songs are prohibited, restricted, the system will automatically remove the songs from the applicable inmates, MP3 players, and issue a true unit credit the next time the applicable inmates log into the music service and either reevaluate their player or purchase music. Inmates that purchase the songs but they have not been delivered to their players will also receive a true unit credit after the songs are marked prohibited and restricted. So they think that playing Mel Brooks' anti-Hitler comedy is going to cause the reemergence of the Nazi Party in the prison. What a bunch of dumb fucking prison administrators. And Dennis sent me a little thing that somebody sent him from Australia. I'll just read a little bit of it for you. Australia's descent from white to darkness. Bright future. Australia was founded in 1788 as a white colony of white Britain. No African slaves were ever imported. No local so-called Aborigines labor was available. Instead, 160,000 white slaves, convicts, were used. A quarter of them were Irish rebels and paupers. Others were drawn from the Southwest London petty criminals and pioneer English trade union activists. The presence of so many activists later led to two revolts, 1804's Vinegar Hill and 1854's Eureka riots, I guess. Both were led by Irishmen. You got to watch those Irishmen. The 1854 saw a large number of Americans take part, former California 49ers. If an outpost of white civilization is to survive, we is a logical location. An entire continent, self-sufficient in food and fuel. In 2007, John Howard's anti-immigration liberal national coalition government was defeated over a minor labor reform bill for the pro-migrant ALP Greens Alliance. Rapidly raised immigration from 140,000 a year from zero tolerance for illegals to 300,000 per year, all non-whites and open borders. This was followed by the Julia Gillard ALP government, 2009-2012. 8,500 refugees arrived on our northern shores. White public outrage saw that the LN returned to power. Tony Abbott's turn back the boats policy is widely popular, so illegals ended, but the 300,000 non-white continue to arrive, a spreading stain of Indians, Chinese, and Africans. Australia achieved dubious status of zero population growth of white people in the 1970s, followed by Whitlam ALP government reforms to marriage and birth laws. Abortion and divorce were thereby freely available. By 2015, 100,000 white children are murdered, PA, and 54% of the marriage end in separation. Worse, 56% do not even marry, living de facto, as ALP reforms give de facto the marriage the same status. As a result, half of white children born here lack one parent or legitimacy. One result of the 1972-75 radical ALP Whitlam government was a total takeover of the media and education sectors by leftists, mainly pro-Chinese Maoist. No one works in the education or media here who is not a communist. No other views are tolerated. It is a minor miracle that LNP ever win or retain office. It is solely due to the rampant ALP corruption and incompetence rivaling the last days of the Soviet era. ALP apartchiks, literally, in the local parlance, can't run a bath. It is only their total media control that gets them regularly reelected. Of course, dozens of minor parties exist but fail to win seats due to the ALP-controlled media's blackout. This same censorship even used the term two-party preferred to emphasize that they only acknowledge the two major parties as existing. Well, that's exactly the way it is here. Those two obey the dictate and agenda of the Asian investors and globalists, capitalists, like R. Murdoch, infamous for his News of the World, Fox News TV. Little Australia versus Big Australia. When Rudd was foisted on us by Murdoch and company in 2007, one of his first pronouncements was of a bigger Australia. Australia, since the Whitlam takeover in 1972, had been regaled with greeny radicals in our schools and in our media demanding we protect the environment by having fewer children and reducing our footprint on our fragile continent. Modern women were only too happy to comply, foregoing childbearing for careers. Any accidental conceptions were rapidly deleted via pre-abortions and morning-after pills. The scorched womb policy left the continent empty till 2007. Big Australia to be non-white. The fewer of us, 21 million in an area only slightly smaller than the USA, was then reversed. This 40 years hiatus was now disparaged as an era Little Australia. Via Asian and African immigration, we were now to become Big Australia. All the previous raucous greeny experts fell silent. ALP hacks to the core, they had done their job to prevent the emergence of a white continent in the South Pacific. They had encouraged and aided the deletion of the entire generation of white reproduction. 3 million babies killed, 73 to 2013. These same Greens now became Big Australia advocates and boasted we would be 35 million by 2050 AD, an increase of 14 million over 35 years, all non-white, leaving us with a non-white majority. No debate was encouraged or even allowed. The ALP-controlled media closed ranks by 2013. We had risen to 24 million. The newer 3 million entirely non-white. What shocked many older whites was how angry and hateful the new immigrants were, whether poor Africans or rich Indians. They collectively show only contempt for us whites and our country. Their attitude appears to be, "What the hell are you still doing here, Whitey?" Instances of racism soon spiraled. Most famously, the ironically named 2014 Adam Good case, where a 6'4" Australian football league player had a 13-year-old white girl arrested for calling him an ape at a football match. 2 weeks later, after nonstop media adulation, weak liberal PM Tony Abbott named Cook 2014's Australian of the Year, this big nigger. Despite this, or maybe because of it, every subsequent match, Good was booed off the field for the next 6 months. By 2015, with the ALP media chiding the public, fans deserting the highly politicized AFL code, and AFL clubs threatened fans with life bans and suspensions for racism, was worse than ever. Well, why do white people go to the goddamn things? All these white people that claim to be racial are going to nigger ball games, worshiping these niggers. Think it's cute when their white daughters date these damn monkeys. What do you expect? It was clear AFL had become an ABO job creation scheme, and it was no longer a sport. White masses smelled a rat and began to stay away, choosing the NRL and soccer instead. Well, what will it take to ignite this smoldering rage, this inchoate sense that something is not right? The role of all white rights groups and many lone wolves must be to educate the public. Well, you're not going to do that. Only evolution and the weather change might educate them a little bit. Don't waste your time. Motivate the public. Well, you're not going to motivate the public because they're used to living the way they've always lived, and they, you know, it's going to take revolution in the streets. And that's only usually done by about less than 10%. What do you think this, how do you think this revolution of the country came about in this country? It was only a small percentage of people who ever fought in a revolution. Make them aware of solutions. It's a waste of time to make the masses so aware of solutions. Forget that. You see, this is right wing. These people are probably really good people, but they're going to try to do the same old, same old, same old that has never worked, and it won't work now. To summarize Lenin, agitprop is our method. Agitate the masses. That's a good idea, agitate the masses, awakening them to their oppression, then propagandize them into becoming political activists. Or as U.S. black activists have been saying since the 60s, agitate, educate, organize. Well, I just say agitate, agitate, agitate. But nothing will change until there's blood in the streets. I'm sorry if I offend anybody, but it's, you know, the only time the blacks ever really get anything is when they burn a town down. Or when the blood in the streets. Check it out. You think that they got it from marching with Martin Luther King? Horse shit. Oh, some did. Some did. But the majority of them, they only got anything in the ghetto when they burnt the ghetto down. Yeah. And then the government come in and build them a new ghetto. Yeah. And that's it from Australia, that by way of Dennis Mahon's prison cell. Here's the first negative letter or note I've ever gotten from a prisoner. Usually they're happy as hell to get our stuff. But they do write in, and I send them some stuff and see how they react. This guy says, "To whom it may concern, please do not send any more mail to me. I'm a believer in Astrua and only seek information to that effect." Well, That's true. I was still run, I think, by Steve McNallan, unless he died. And he was a pacifist Odinist. He was not a militant white Odinist. And so that section of the Odinists, or that Asatruas, put bunch of pussies, most of them. I'm not saying all of them, because I don't know what I don't know what's happened to that outfit since I left California. I do not promote hate or any other violence. The literature you sent was confiscated. I made a mistake, and I'm contacting you. Please do not contact me again. This guy's name was Keith Burns, I believe. Well, I sure won't waste a stamp on you, buddy. Oh, yeah. Keith Barnes. He's at Clackula Annex, Crawfordsville, Florida. Maybe that heat out there in the swamp has gotten to him. Let's see, what else have I got here? Now, I thought I had a letter from David Tate here, but I don't see it. Don't see it right now. Let's see here. Let me check this one out real quick. Oh, that's just a guy paying his dues. Okay, that's it from the mailbag. Somehow I got this show split in two again today, and I don't know how I did that. That's it, boys and girls. I'll be back tomorrow on Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. And in the meantime, if you're listening to TV, and, hey, look, all this shooting up and bombing, you know, over there in France and Belgium. Well, can I say, you get what you pay for, man. Military industrial complex bombs the shit out of everybody with tremendous amounts of collateral damage, and they go on the run trying to get out of the way, and of course with them comes these guerrilla fighters. They're not terrorists, they're guerrilla fighters. Unconventional warfare fighters. They try to use the word terrorist on everything. That gets a little old. Sayonara.
Are you an assassin? I'm a soldier. You don't need them. You're an errand boy. And by grocery trucks to collect the bill.